All right, so we're at the bottom of Nun Amud Bet. I just finished up a little story about Rebbe, about his wedding in Bar Kappara. So the Gemara begins, Yom HaDemachaych Bei Rebbe, on a day that Rebbe laughed, what's called laughed, but maybe smile, right? Peronata Bil'alma. Bad things happen to the world. And that Rebbe was a little too frivolous. And that wasn't good for the world. I'm a little bar kapara lo tichinan. Right? Don't crack jokes. He finally invites him to the wedding. He says, "Don't crack any jokes. Don't make us laugh." And I'll give you 40 kernels of wheat or something. He says, basically, I'll pay him off not to make jokes at the wedding, because Bar Kappara was known as a batman, right? As a big jokester. So let's say Mar, the Beina Shakilna, says, "Listen, I'll take whatever wheat I want." What did he do? Shakilna, the Beina Shakilna, Shakal Dikula Rabo, took a big basket, Chatya Kufra, and then he put tar or pitch in the basket to fill in the holes. Sachfei Al Reshe. Now, what exactly did here? And the time of the way I read the Gemara, and then I saw the Marshal reads it this way, he put it on his head, like he wore it like some sort of costume or some sort of joke, and then you can maybe understand the Gemara. It says somewhere else here that he's halfway aroshe, it means that he flipped a basket on its head, and he turned the basket over. Which I'm not sure why, you'll see, I'm not sure why that's so funny. Alright, Vazal, Va'amarle, then he went to Rebbe and said, Lichali Mar, Arbin Gurye, Chide, Dereshina, Becha. So he says, "Come, give me the 40 kernels of wheat that I borrowed from you." So Achuch Rebbe left. So again, if he put on his head and he wore like some sort of costume and his face wasn't, he covered his face with it. That's kind of how the Marsha says, this was like a perm costume. He covered his face and he heard his voice and was talking from behind the basket. That was, makes sense why he left. I don't know if he flipped the basket on its head and then put the wheat into the basket. Not sure what was so funny, but either way, he got Rebbe to laugh. Didn't I warn you not to, joke around, not to make me laugh? Says, "I'm just coming to collect the wheat that I borrowed, or you borrowed. I mean, I'm coming to collect the wheat that you owe me."
Yeah, if you read the bigger explanation, you cannot say that he put it on his head. I think it's like the equivalent of, what does bigger turn the page with this hand? He took a big basket, he coated it instead of the glove, and he took it upside down. There's nothing like his kid,
Right.
Pull me up over here.
That's good. I mean, you're right. That makes sense. That's a good explanation. I don't know if I would have laughed, but.
I guess but would you laugh if somebody was wearing a basket on their head?
I don't know, but he was like a voice, maybe doing a voice, imitation. Right, it's true. I don't know what, whatever it was, it entertained Rebbe. And then he says, this Bar Kappara is a character. He says, "Amalei Bar Kappara Lebrate the Rebbe." He says to the daughter of Rebbe, "Lamachar, Shatina Chama, and I'm going to drink wine, Rikuda Davuch, while your father dances, Ubir Kirkani Deimeth. And while your mother, Tzuex with Iran says, Kirkudo is Mikarkeret and Mizamerit."
Did you read the line above that?
I think so, but you can read it again. I said, what? I'm going to lose Azahartach. I told you not to joke around. I'm just coming to collect on the wheat that you owe me. Again, I'm not so sure what the what was funny, but he was still joking around. All right, Amalei Bar Kappara Lebrate the Rebbe, said to the Rebbe's daughter. So this is the wedding's the next day, right? So he says
that actually reinforces that since Rebbe laughed, holding the basket inverted and zeroing put in the hand was exactly what Rebbe ordered.
Come
with you with the right.
There you go. There's the delivery. Because I could have. I
was listening to comedy in this, aren't you?
I've done a study of Talmudic humor.
Right. Because Marshall explained the other way. I didn't totally understand it the other way, but thank you. That makes more sense, explaining why you flipped the basketball. Right, Amalei Bar Kappara Lebrate, the Rebbe, said to Rebbe's daughter, "The Machashet Tina Chamra, I'll be drinking wine. while your father dances, and while your mother is around, right? I don't know if she's calling and singing. I don't know if that means, or the Rashi says vizikata, that your mother will pour me wine. She'll be, you know, pouring me or making me wine, right? I think otherwise you can make her care means to flop around. So I don't know if his mother was, her mother would be dancing also. All right. So Ben Elasa, Chatnei de Rebbe Hava. Ben Elasa was Rebbe's son-in-law. Ba'ashur Godel Hava, and he was very wealthy. Zamnei de Behula de Rebbe, Shimon de Rebbe. So he was invited him to his son's wedding, and right, his brother-in-law is getting married, so he invites him to his brother-in-law's wedding. Amalei bar pekar par le Rebbe, my toeva. What's the word toeva mean in the Torah? So called Amalei Rebbe the chinhu toeva. Anything that Rebbe described as a toeva, pircha bar kapar. Bar kapar was shlugged it up. He rejected the explanation. So Amalei Parshayat, he says, you explain it. So Rebbe says back to Bar Kappar, you explain it. Amalei, Teji Debitchi Timrili Nakla. Right, so call your wife and have her pour me a, you know, a cup's worth. A Nakla is what you use when you feel as you're dying, right? Nakla. Atat Ramulei, she gave it to him. Amalei Rebbe Kumakodli, says to Rebbe, stand, get up and dance for me. Demerlach. So, and then I'll tell you what it is. Right, so here, he's fulfilling his, you know, what he said he would do for to the daughter of Rebbe, and he had his her mother pour the wine, and now she's having Rebbe dance in front of him. So, so then he says, this is the explanation for the Torah, toiva, it means, which, you know, you are making a mistake with it. So what does it mean, toiva? So, toiva is used, is a term used by Mishkav Zachar, by homosexuality. And so the explanation of toiva here means toa tabak omar shminiach et ishto shel heter v'tafazu shel znus. And that's the way Rashi reads it, the Ran reads it, toa tabak shminiach mishke ve'isha v'olech etel zachor. And he is rejecting the normal way and going off on a mistaken path. Right, so that's toiva. So then he moves on to the next word. Mekasa achrina. So he got another, he had another cup of wine. Alright, and then I'm relaying my tevel. Alright, so that's tevel asushneham, that's in bestiality. The term tevel is used by bestiality. I'm relaying kinyana kadma. Sigmar doesn't explicitly say, but he says basically, Bar Kapara had the first, sequence repeated. Meaning that he had Rebbe's wife bring him wine and had Rebbe dance in front of him. Then I'm relaying, evidently, right, do it again for me, so I will say it to you. Avad, he did it again. Amarle Tevel, who is Tavlin Yeshba.
Bitzmian,
that's what Rashi says. Tavlin Yeshba. What type of, you know, Tavlin means spices, but what type of enjoyment is there here? Mishani Hada Bia Mikun Ho Biot. Why is this any more pleasurable or better than any other intercourse? I mean, this woman who goes to bestiality, why would she, what is compelling her to do such a thing? Why is there so much more pleasure or benefit from doing such a thing? That's how he explains Tavlin or Tevil. Tamerle Umay Zima. So he says, what's the word Zimami? So zima is used more broadly, right, in Arayot, the term zima, right, amalei, ibit kinyana kadma, all right, another round, right, so I have another round of wine poured by your wife, you dance, amalei zum mahi, all right, so zima is zum mahi, meaning who is this, or what is this? So the Rishon and Mir say that means zima refers to someone who has, Rashi explains here, someone who has been either with multiple men, or a man has been with multiple women, and then it's indiscernible who the child belongs to. So then you have children. Right? We had this Malaharet Zima. I think we had this together in Kesubos. Oh no, Yivamos. Yivamos had it together that when it says Malaharet Zima, is that they will be all these children who are unaware of who their parents are, and therefore you'll have brothers marrying sisters and uncles marrying, you know, to fathers marrying daughters, just because nobody will know who the true father or mother is. I mean, there won't be yichus.
The Mitzrayim were shtufei zima by makas bechoros. We see that.
All right, they lost a lot of bechoros that weren't otherwise considered bechoros, right?
Hashem
knows.
Could identify.
All right. So then. Lo yachol ben alasav mizbal. His son-in-law, his wealthy son-in-law, couldn't handle it anymore. Meaning that Rebbe was dancing around and making a fool of himself in front of Bar Kapara, so he couldn't handle it. Kam benafaku v'intetei mitamon. He and his wife, in a storm down, left the wedding because they were embarrassed by Rebbe's conduct and behavior. I assume that means when he says he and his wife left, that meant that it was Rebbe's daughter, right? That left because he was his son-in-law. So, assuming him and, Rebbe's daughter left the wedding out of embarrassment. All right, mine ben alasa. What does it mean, ben alasa? So, Rashi learns that the question here is, how do you know he was wealthy? Right, that's what Rashi says. How do we know he's wealthy? Marshaw learns, and I think it's more interesting, because at least the continuation of how he learns the Gemara is more interesting. He says, my ben alasa is, why was he called ben alasa? Why wasn't he called by his name? Why is he called by his father's name? All right, so now Rashi, so we'll read it Rashi, and then we'll explain what the Marshaw says.
Right,
so that's a good question. So that might be, because he didn't, all right.
Yeah, I know, is he ever referred to him?
Right, his first name, yeah. Rami Bar. That's, he's really his son. I don't know. All right. I don't know the. But anyway, so we have Tanya. Lo lechinam kizer ben alasai et ma'utav. He wasn't for naught that he spent his money. El harot behem tisport shel kohen gadol. He wanted to show how a kohen gadol got a haircut. Meaning that he used to get a very expensive haircut. And that expensive haircut was equivalent or the same as the one that the kohen gadol got. Dichtiv. Kasom yikasmu et roshehem. Right, they will chop up their heads. I mean, this is in Yecheskel, it's describing the Kohanim, what the Kohanim will do. Right? Tana kein lulinit. That which they got, this kasum yikasmu, is like a lulinit. My lulinit. Amihoda tisparta yechidata. Right? So this is a either unique or expensive haircut, or beautiful haircut. Unique, expensive, beautiful haircut. Probably all of the above. Right? Hey, dummy, what is it? Amarava, Rosh Hashanah, B'tzad Ik Rosh Hashanah. They cut it so that the hair,
perfectly layered hair.
Right, that the end of one hair reached the roots of the next hair. Whatever that looked like and whatever the skill was. Ik Rosh Hashanah, behind him to support Shal Kohen Gadol. This is how the Kohen Gadol, who always had to look his best. Right, that was the type of tisporti guy. So that's why Rashi writes, oh, you see from the Brisa, that he was wealthy because he spent, right, a lot of money on haircuts. And that's how they knew he was wealthy. That's the way Rashi learns the Gemara. The Marshal learns the Gemara. I think it's more interesting only because it's a good Musar. He says, why was he called Ben Alasa? He says, because there are two types of wealthy people. There are people who are wealthy because they earned the money. There are people who are wealthy because their parents were wealthy. And he's called Ben Alasa because his wealth came from his father, not because he had earned the money. So Marshal says that it's the derech of someone who inherits money to be a big spender. And in that, if one earns money and has the hard work to get the money, then they have more of an appreciation for that money. Whereas if one inherits the money, they tend to be a pizeret malutav, someone who throws around money, meaning because they have less appreciation for that money, and therefore they spend more freely, more openly. So that's what the Marsha says. That's what they said about him. The Bryce is coming to say that lo bechinam kizeret miltav, that it was not for naught. Meaning that even though these people normally, the inheritors, spend money willy-nilly or without consideration, he happened to spend his money wisely, and he spent it on this haircut to show what the Kohen Gadol's haircut looked like, to get the Kohen Gadol like haircut, and therefore it was lo bechinam kizeret miltav. It was not for naught that he spent that money. Right? I think, I don't know, that's Marzara's conclusion. I don't think you have to learn that way. You can learn that he was a big spender, meaning that he was all looking out, but he was willing to spend on something that most people would not spend on. Again, because the inheritor of the wealth tends to be more free with the wealth than the earner of the wealth. Okay? Now, back to the Gemara. We had one thing left in the Mishnah, and that was the Galat Rimutza. Right? The gourd that was Rimutza. Right? So we don't know what does Rimutza mean in the Mishnah, right? That was excluded from, right, when the person took a nether, it excluded the what we saw yesterday, which is Beitze Termuta. Right? If a person restricts himself with Maase Kedera, or is in Betapsu. Then he's usher in domestic terrak, umutra, he's allowed to have a beitza termuta, which we saw yesterday is this specially cooked egg, right, that they shrink down by cooking 1,000 times in hot water, 1,000 times in cold water. And galata remutza. Question is, what is this galata remutza? My galata remutza. Yes. What is galata remutza? Mashmal kra. Kukuzai. It's a gourd from Kukuzai. It's a Kukuzian gourd. Right, so it's a place. Bashimar, Talat, Hatmuna, Biremets. Right, this is the more common explanation that we've seen through Shas, is that it's a gourd that's placed into the ashes. And that they, you know, buried in the ashes or in the coals, and that's how it's cooked. It's made Ravina the Ravashi. So Ravina challenged Ravashi's explanation. But it says, Rabbi Nechemia Omer, right, so the Mishnah in Kilayim discusses Dalat Aramit, he Dalat Mitzrit. The Aramean gourd is the equivalent to the Egyptian gourd. Kilayim, that gourd is Kilayim im Hayivanit. Right, it's, if you have a Aramean or Egyptian gourd, it cannot be planted together with a Greek gourd, because the Greek gourd is kilayim with the Egyptian gourd. Kilayim im harumutza. And it's kilayim with the rumutza. So rumutza over here can obviously not mean the way it's cooked, because that has no relevance in terms of kilayim. The only time rumutza would have relevance in terms of kilayim if it was from the location, and it was from Kukuzai. To suggest the gourd of Kukuzai is kilayim with the gourd of Mitzri, that makes sense. But to suggest that a kuka, you know, a galat rumutza is the method by which it's cooked, should have no relevance in the Isurei Kilayim. So my sense to you, though, it's a strong question against Rav Ashi's position. All right. Next. Now this piece of the Mishnah that's mentioned here, somewhat, seems unnecessary because this was already in our Mishnah. The Mishnah we read at the beginning of the Perek, right? This is exactly what's quoted in the Mishnah at the beginning of our Perek. That's one. So a couple of things. One is either they just repeated it here, like they do in many Gemaras where they repeat pieces of the Mishnah. They're just, the mistake is that the publishers put the Masnisin and Gemara here, which shouldn't have been here. Or the other possibility is that it shouldn't have been in the first Mishnah, and it should have been over here. And that they put it together when they enjoined the Mishnah. You can see there's a star with a parentheses, right? A half moon there with a star. If you look below, I don't know where it is placed in your Gemara, but there's some sort of note that makes mention of it.
A footnote base.
You see that?
Yeah. It says, Pliya ki klal Mishnah lezu
klal. Or you Mishnah delel. I mean, what is this doing here? It was already mentioned in the previous Mishnah. V'al korkach tals itzrami b'mishnah delel. So the first suggestion is what? That the first Mishnah has the mistake in it. Right? But Igar Mishnah Masudar Hapa. That this is the section of the Mishnah. But you find this in different Gemaras, we find that, right? That the Mishnah is really one Mishnah. And the Gemara will divide it up into subsections as it discusses the Mishnah. Or the other way around. The Gemara will have numerous Mishnayos put together, right? And then, add it in later. V'chein Nira Mitok Perish Iran. That's what it seems to be from the Perish Iran. Right? Oh, demilat masnisa and demilat gemar nipas halka b'taos. It was a mistake, meaning that they shouldn't have been here. I mean, the Mishnah is already in the beginning of the parak. And this is unnecessary to be written here, meaning that the words Mishnah and Gemara aren't necessary. That it's a repeat or a psak halacha that is in the Gemara. Baram, Bishnui Rashi, Masnisa and Lael, Mash Perish Rashi Hachi. Thing is that Rashi explains the Gemara, this Mishnah differently here than he did in the Mishnah in the beginning of the parak, even though it's the same exact lashon. And that is b'masei ratachna. And we'll see that in a second. All right.
It says also here b'chol kisvei hayad lo darsian kan lach Mishnah.
They don't put it here, right? So it's interesting. I didn't know this, but I heard this from Rameir Lichtenstein that the Bavli, right, was centered around when they redacted the Bavli had the Mishnayos placed in it. Right? And therefore, the Gemara, the way the Mishnah is divided up is usually in, makes sense according to the Gemara's. Yerushalmi, on the other hand, the Gemara was written without the Mishnayos in there. And they later placed the Mishnayos. They later on went and placed the Mishnayos back in to make it, you know, or to somewhat make it make sense that the Mishnayos belonged in the Yerushalmi. So I wonder, only wonder if Nedarim has, because we've seen a lot of strange things in Nedarim, and it's similar to Yerushalmi in some ways, even in the Lashonos, and I wonder if the Mishnayos were placed in later in the Nedarim as well. I mean, that was a phenomenon here, and that might be why this problem arose, was because they were, the Gemara is written, and then they were trying to insert the Mishnayos in the right place to have them make sense. All right, just a thought. Another Ma'asik Deira, one restricts themselves in Ma'asik Deira, anything meant in a pot. Any Yisrael of a Ma'asik Ratakta, only restricted in Ma'asik Ratakta. So we saw earlier in the Mishnah, Rashi explained Ma'asik Ratakta as being Davar HaRuteyach Gom Rotev, something that boils like gravy, right? Liquid soup, some sort of gravy-like substance. Whereas the other Rishonim over there said it was Davar Nirtach by Nigmar Bekdeiro, something that's boiling and it's ended. I mean, it's finished cooking in the Bekdeiro. That was the alternative explanations that we saw over there. Now Rashi over here gives an alternative explanation. Maaseh Ritachta, Haino Davashin Nigmar Bishula Bekdeiro, Veinu Elo Amechamesh Daminim. So Rashi says, well, it's something that's finished being cooked in a Bekdeiro, and it has to be from the five grains. As the Rashi changes his tune here, which is why it's interesting, because the Rashi here is different than the Rashi on the mission at the beginning of the parak, which makes you wonder. Alright, so either way, this must say Ritakta. Amar konim ha-yore the k'dera. If he doesn't say ma'asik k'dera, something that's made in the k'dera, but rather yore the k'dera, anything that goes in the k'dera, right, then she'eni to'im, asr b'chol nasa b'k'dera. Then he's asr anything that's made in the k'dera. So Tanya, let's understand this. Another mina yore the kedera, someone who takes a neder from that which goes into the pot, also be yore the ilfas, shkvar yore the kedera. Then he's restricted from having something that is finished in a frying pan of sorts, but was originally cooked in a pot. I mean, it started to be cooked in the pot, and then it's finished in the frying pan. Kodem shirei l'ilfis, before it enters the frying pan. Mina yorei l'ilfis, if someone restricts themselves in that which goes into the frying pan, mutar v'yorei l'ktero, then he's allowed to eat that which is yorei l'ktero. So now the question is, what did he say here? Mina yorei l'ilfis, if he can't go into a frying pan, then what is mina yorei l'ktero? Right, so Rashi says over here that mina yorei l'ktero means that it went into l'ktero before it ended up in the ilfis. Right, that's what he says. But now, Iran, Tosfos over here gives an explanation. I think it's the easiest way to understand it. And if I'll read the Gemara this way. Alright, because Tosfos says there's a difference. We're going to use the words naseh and yored. That which is done and that which is yored goes in. It says, well, the word yored always means the tchila, the beginning of the cooking process. Yored is the beginning of the cooking process. Naseh is the nigmar, that which is finished in the process. Right, so yored there would reference the beginning of the cooking process, whereas naseh means that's where it's finished. Therefore, if he takes a neder mina yored l'kdera, that's the first line in the brisa here, then also be yored l'ilfis, shvar yara l'kdera. Even though it's finished in the frying pan, it went into the pot. Why? So why is he also? Because yored means something at the beginning of the cooking process. Kodem to yored l'ilfis, before it went into the frying pan. Mina yored l'ilfis, he restricts himself that which goes in the frying pan. Mutar be yored l'kdera. Then he can go in that which goes into the k'dera, right, assuming, right, that it was never in a ilfis, as opposed to Rashi, others who explain here that here yored l'kdera means that even something that was in an ilfis already, but if it goes, it finished in the pot, that's what matters. But according to Tosfos, no, yored means anything that is begun in that process. So therefore, mutabi yored l'kdera here means that if it's finished, if it was started with a yored l'kdera and finished in ilfis, then it's okay. In a nasha l'kdera, so Tosfos says nasha l'kdera means that it's finished in the l'kdera, mutabi nasha l'ilfis. Then he can eat that which is made in the frying pan, or finished in the frying pan. And then asa b'ilfis, that which is finished in the frying pan, then mutar ben asa b'kdera. That was finished in the pot, that's okay. Right, so again, all these are l'shon b'nei adam, right, and the Tvei Tosfos explains it is yored and nasa has to do with where in the process of cooking you are referencing. Right. Another min hayored l'tanur, someone strips himself in that which goes into the, or down into the oven, ein a tanur, ein osar ela b'pat. The only thing that's referred to as yored l'tanur that goes into the oven is bread. Because bread was not cooked in a pot or in a pran, right? How was the bread cooked? On the side, they pasted it onto the walls of the oven. They used to take the dough, put it onto the walls of the oven, and then it cooks, right, on the walls of the oven. So therefore, yored la tanur, that's a reference to pot. Mar kol mashe tanur, if you refer to anything that is done in the tanur, then asur b'chol nashim b'tanur, anything that's cooked in the oven, not simply something that's made in the oven, right, which is uniquely made in the oven, which is bread, but anything that goes into the oven would be restricted to him. Next Mishnah. Min ha-kabush, it'd be restricted in that which is pickled, marinated. In a sermon, a kabush shall yerek. Then he's only restricted in that which is pickled, you know, pickled vegetables or marinated vegetables. Kabush she'eni to'aim asur b'chol ha'kabushim. If he says kabush she'eni to'aim, then he's asur in all of the pickled or marinated items. So now what changed between the first statement and the second statement? That is the subject of Machlokas Rishonim here. What did he say in the first case that we said it's only Yerek? And what did he say in the second case that is all Kabushim? What changed? So the one interpretation is that Mina Kabush, that's all he said. He said Kabush. So when he just says marinated or pickled, that means just vegetables. When he says Kabush She'eni Toeim, the addition of She'eni Toeim then adds on the additional items beyond vegetables. The additional language of She'eni Toeim, right, adds on an additional set of items that will be included. Again, so the fact that he added language that was unnecessary, we have to interpret that language to having some bearing or meaning. So any toim would include not only vegetables, but other items. That's one possibility. The Ryan learns, which I think makes a little more sense, an easier way to learn is, Hakabush has the Hei Hayidiyah on it. So Hakabush means the pickled ones. What is normally, and you have to pick the item, when you use the Hayidiyah, pick the item that is the most usually or most normally pickled. And what are those? Those are vegetables. Right? Whether it's when you say kabush any toim without the hay idea, then the reference is to any form of pickled or marinated.
But right? Then that should just say kabush.
Right, so that is fair. That is any toim. So the Ryan says over here that any toim does not limit it. I think he writes the other way. That any toim. Right, so he says, the Tani, like your question, the Tani, Sheni Toim, or Sheni Toim, La Mishum Zilo Amar Sheni Toim, Lo Mitzah B'chol Kabushim, and not because that detracts, right, that's the thing, that the item that makes the difference, give the Kabush Mitzah B'chol, El Lera Busanate, it's a Chiddush. The Afilu Amar Sheni Toim, Imamar Kabush in Ilo Lo, right, meaning that it has to do with the word Kabush, and not Sheni Toim. So if you said HaKabush, Sheni Toim, right, that would not make a difference. So that's what he's saying, that the She'eni Toim does not change anything. It's only the word Kavush. That's what the Rambam says. There's the Chiddush to teach you the opposite of what you would have thought. Right? She'eni Toim is not additive, right? It does nothing. And that's why it's mentioned here, to show you that it has no bearing. It's only the word Kavush that has bearing. Again, both sides have an issue, right? Either the first, according to one explains She'eni Toim is the difference, then why was there Hayidiyah in the first case, right? One can just say that I'm another Min Kavush. And the fact that he's been Hakavush, but why was there Hayidiyah?
So really that the Hayidiyah makes it refer to the food item itself, and when he says without the Hayidiyah, it's more in the preparation process, so that's why you would think, anything pickled, or preserved, whatever you say, whereas
the pickle is
whatever people usually mean when they say it.
Right. All right, so now I'm not going to say that. I explained this. This Mishnah and the entire next Mishnah are basically affected by how we just learned this. Okay, so just keep it in mind. You'll see that the Gemara is just going to keep going through these similar types of things. So someone who says next min hashaluk, so it's either hey ayudiyah or shaluk, right? Then asur eno asur elamina shaluk so basar. That again, if it's either the hey ayudiyah or he didn't mention sheni toim, then it only refers to meat because that's the main type of shaluk, right? But there is, again, we said shaluk is either overcooked or undercooked, whichever choice you take. Shaluk sheni toim. If he simply says shaluk either without the hey ayudiyah or he says sheni toim, asur b'chol shalukim. Then anything that is overcooked or undercooked would include it. Amar Rav Acha braid the Rav Avil the Rav Ashi. Amar dikvish my, the shalik, my tzali and maliach should go on the next mission. We'll see, right? Eichan mashrim, what do they mean? So now the question, according to the Ran, who says the hey ayudiyah is different, the question is d. Does the letter d, is that like the hey ayudiyah, or is that as if you said the generic term kabush? So we say dikavush. Does that mean the equivalent of pakavush, or is that the equivalent of kavush? That's the Gemara's question here. Right? Or according to those that say sheni toim, when he eliminates the word any toim, what's the din? I mean, when he says dikavush without the word any toim, what does it mean now? So that's the question here. And guess what? The answer is right, tibaye, right, which is the nadarim's equivalent of teku. We have no idea. We don't know. No answer. All right. Next Mishnah. Which again is a continuation of our mission. Min hatzli, right? The one who takes from the roasting. So ha again, either hey ayidia or that he doesn't miss machine. Toim inuasra litzli min hatzlisho basar. Roasted meat, because that's what you usually roast. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Tzlish any toim asr b'chol hatzluim. Right? If he said tzlish any toim, then it includes anything that's roasted. Min de ha maliach, again, either hey ayidia or without any toim. Inuasra min maliach shel dag. What's the normal type of salted item? That is a salted fish. Then anything that is salted would be considered under this nether. Dag dagim shani toim. If he says that he says dag and dagim, then asr behan ben bigdolim ben bigtanim. Whether they're big fish or small fish. Why? Because dag would refer to a big fish because you sell them one at a time in the singular. Dagim refers to smaller fish because you would sell them in multiples, right? So therefore, dag, when the fact that he used a double lashon of dag and dagim means that he's referring to both big and small fish. Ben meluchim, whether they are salted, ben tefalim, whether they're unsalted, ben chayim, ben mebushalim, whether they're raw, right, sushi, or whether they are cooked. Umutar, vitari tshufa. But he can't eat these, what do you call it, minced fish, right, some sort of, chopped up fish. Maybe filter fish might even qualify. That something that's not eaten. His reference to dag and dagim is to a whole fish, and then that is not a whole fish, right? Would not be included in his. So that's possible. Filter fish would be a good example of an item there where the fish is not being served as a whole fish, but being sold or served, right, in a manner that does not reference its origins. I mean, that's not shaped. It's not shaped like a fish. It looks like right. Right, so the fish is processed, right? Ubitzir, right? He's mutter b'ter de trufa, ubitzir uvimorius, probably. That's what we should read over here. That he's allowed to eat fish brine, right? Or morius is the, one of them has like the fish innards in it. The tzir has the innards of the fish in it. And then the morius is just the fats of the fish to make up these fish brines. Okay, I know that's the next line, right? I know they're minatachana. Right, the one who takes another from a tzachana, aser b'tarit trufa, they're also to have this chopped up fish, processed fish, mutter b'tzir murius, they're mutter and tzir murius. So what is tzachana? Right, so that's not so clear what this tzachana is. Right? So the Rashi, which is fine, whereas Rashi says that I should mention this. Rashi says that tarit shufa is the dag shishmo tarit. It's a type of fish that was called the tarit, and then shufa they ate it, chopped up. The tzachana here seems to be the way the Ron explains it, tzachana. Tzachana is a fish mix that has some whole fish in it and some chopped fish in it. Okay, so if you ask yourself in tzachana, then asur b'tarit trufa. Then you are restricted in tarit trufa because that's chopped fish. Since the tzachana has some processed fish in it, therefore you'll be asur in something that is fully processed. Right? Umutur b'tzir murius. But again, if you have fish innards or fish fats that make up the brine, those would not be restricted because there's not real fish in those items, right? You're talking about derivatives of the fish. Right. I know that Tari Chufa, now here there's a here's the difference. One who restricts themselves in Tari Chufa in the chopped up fish, then the Girsa of the other most Rishonim is absorbed Sirin Morios. Then you're usher in even Sirin Morios because already if you're talking about processed fish, fully processed fish without any whole fish in it, then you're going to restrict yourself in Sirin Morios as well. The Ron has an alternative Girsa, which is it's Mutar Sirin Morios. When you restrict yourself in Tari Chufa, since that actually has real pieces of fish in it, meaning that it has, fish meat in it, therefore it's only restricted in Tari Chufa and not in Sirin Morios, which only have fish derivatives and not actual fish meat or fish flesh in there. So the Ra'an has it mutar, the other Rishonim have it as asur. Alright, Tanya. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, dag she'ani toim. Person just uses the word dag, asur b'gdolim umutar b'ktanim. Then he's asuring big fish and not small fish, because that's what we said in our Mishnah. Dag means big fish. Dagim refers to small fish. Now, daga, whereas opposed to our Mishnah, which differentiates between dag and dagim, being singular and plural, referring to big fish and small fish, here, Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that the differentiation is between male and female. If you use dag, it means a big fish. Daga means a small fish. Dagash, any toim, asur biktanim, umutar biktolim. Then you can add small fish and a big fish. Dag daga, if he does dag and daga, shayini toim, asur ben biktolim ben biktanim. Then he's restricted in all. So as opposed to our mission, which uses dag and dagim, here he uses dag and daga. So I'm a little popular. Baye, so a papa says to Baye, me my to dag, shayini toim, gadohu. How do you know that the word dag means a big fish? Tichtiv, bayonah, it says what? Bayiman Hashem dag gadol. Right, that's a liplo at Yonah. Shem prepared or brought over a big fish to swallow Yonah. So you see that a dag is a reference to dag gadol. It's b'haktiv. Doesn't it say afterwards vayitpalel Yonah l'Hashem elokav mimei hadagah? Doesn't he say that Yonah davened from the innards of a dagah? Right, so the Gemara says halokasha. Maybe the big fish spit him out, and the small fish then swallowed him. That's why he davened from, he was calling from the daga. The daga was a reference to a small fish. Now, it couldn't be that small because it had Yonah inside of him. So that's the Mishnah point out. Marshall also points out that it's relative. Relative to the first fish, it was smaller than the first fish. Therefore, you can see the word daga is used by small, and daga is used by big. That's the way that you mark. Right, now the Gemara here does not mention the medrash, right, which everyone's familiar with. It's always taught in elementary school that exactly what happened. Yonah was comfortable in the big fish, and therefore he didn't do anything. He was hanging out in the big fish, and then Hashem said, well, you know, time for you to daven a little. So he had him spit him up into the little fish, the female fish, which was pregnant. Right, and there was very tight, the quarters were tight in that fish, and that's why Yonah, b'yitpalel, Yonah min hadagah. That he, right, prays from the daga because that's where he wasn't so comfortable anymore, and therefore he davens from the daga. So
you have to figure comfortable as well as the
term, right?
Term over there.
Exactly. I don't know, right, exactly what comforts he had in the big dog, but.
It's comfortable enough that he was, able to tolerate it.
All right. As we moved to the daga, he wasn't, so it bothered me.
Business class and
coaching. Right. So I just know that it bothered me for many years, and now I saw that the Marsha mentioned it here, because later on, it says that, it goes that when it says that Yonah was spit up on the shore, it says that the dog spit him up back onto the shore. And I didn't understand. The Medrash never addresses that it says that he was in a big dog, and then it says daga, and then it goes back and says he spit out by a dog onto the shore, which means that he was transferred again to a dog, right? The Rosh Hashanah, usually Yashiv, he says that he doesn't know what to say about it. It always bothered me in Yonah that the Medrash doesn't address that last switch, which is that he ends up back up in a dag and not a dagah. Which is, right. Anyway, just interesting note here.
Maybe the small fish got eaten by a big fish.
I think I actually want to learn that the small fish was then swallowed up by a large fish.
And then spit out again. All right. Alright, so now, uvalei dag katan. Ella, va'adaga, asher b'yor meita. So now, what about b'yimitzrayim, the makkah of dam? It says, va'adaga, asher b'yor meita. When they had makkah dam, all the fish died. Right, so daga then is going to be ketanim meitu, gdolim le'o meitu. Only the small fish died, not the big fish. I mean, is that true? It says, ella, daga, mashma gdolim le'o mashma ketanim. When you use the term daga, it can be big or small fish. You go after the way people speak. So from the Torah we have no proof what it means, but when people speak, they use dag to refer to big fish and daga to refer to small fish. If he uses the term tzichim instead of tzachana, I mean tzichim, what's the term tzichim mean? The Rosh formulates it as this. Mi'avi ketzachana umutar b'tzir morius. It's like tzachana, therefore he's like his mutter. Or havi ketarit shufa v'asur b'tzir morius. Which is it like? Tichin. Is it like tarit shufa or is it like tzachana? As opposed to the Ron can't learn that way, because the Ron learns it's mutter in both cases than tzir morius. But the Rosh learns where it's usur in one case. That's what it's like. The Rana, on the other hand, learns that the issue is when you say sakana here, mi mitzvah betzir mari is a low, right? Because is it considered a restriction in tzir umurius or not? I mean, is it different than sakana or not? Different than sakana? So the Gemara's answer is tibay. We have a teku. So we'll leave it here because the next Mishnah continues straight through the next daf and has a lot to be said about it.